Hi, everybody. This is Nancy Miller for My Creative Life, the podcast about creatives, how and why they make the work that they do. And today, my special guest is a return guest, Laura LaCamara. She is the award-winning author and illustrator of such books as Dahlia's Wondrous Hair, published by Pinata Books. It's a bilingual picture book, and she's the author of Floating on Mama's Song, illustrated by Gigi Morales, and published by HarperCollins. It was also a Junior Library Guild selection for fall 2010. Hi, Laura. How are you doing today?
Good. Thank you. I'm so glad to be here. Thank you for inviting me back.
Kind to just share your expertise. I was like, I had a blast talking to you last time. And you just, yeah, so insightful. Your journey was so inspiring. And then how you... At the end of it, it was like, oh, there's another topic for a podcast, her school visits. And I was like, I have to have her back because I was on your Instagram and the connection that you've had with your young readers at the schools and all over the world. I go like, that is phenomenal. That is like, yeah, such a huge honor.
Yeah, well, thank you so much. I mean, I think that school visits and library visits and other kinds of venues have been like a huge chunk of my, you know, career, if you want to call it a career. It is a career. Because it's kind of like you make the books and then you get to share them with the actual readers that are so appreciative, and at schools and libraries, they're just so happy to have you there. They're just so happy to connect the dots. Like, this book was made by an actual human being. And they're just so wonderful and enthusiastic, and it really energizes you, like when you're giving a presentation and you get that reaction.
I think I agree with you completely, because like, it's funny, as an art teacher, when I present a children's book that ties in with my curriculum, the first question they always say, is this person, when we talk about the author illustrator, is this person alive? Are they real? You know, it's... And then if I mention that I have actually maybe even interviewed them on a podcast, or I've actually met them at a conference, it just really, they just like, boom, they're just like, wow.
So, yeah. Yeah. And that could encourage them to read more and to dream more about maybe themselves someday. A real person can write a book. A real person can illustrate a book. So it really, you know, gives them that kind of confidence and inspiration.
And I was wondering, so how did you get started on doing the school visits?
Some notes down, because I'm a person who likes to write notes. there isn't one way. There's a variety of ways, and I bet it happens differently for different author illustrators. For me, I first started doing school visits because my daughter was in elementary school. And so I said, oh, maybe they'll let me come and visit. Please let me. I will do it for free. You know, so I didn't charge, and I just did it as a practice. And I'm telling you, I'm the kind of person who is pretty outgoing, and I feel comfortable in front of people. Speaking in front of an audience is one of the scariest things in the world, as we all know. It's one of the most anxiety-producing things. I will say, maybe it's not for everybody, but me being someone who is relatively comfortable, I was so nervous that first time. But breaking the ice in a safe environment, well, I knew the people, and where I, you know, there wasn't that much at stake. They were like, so like, oh, come on in, you know, you're willing to do this, was a big, great start for me. So that's how I started. And, you know, after that, there was several different ways, like through my friends, through SCBWI, Society of Children's Book Writers and Illustrators. Like, there's two examples. One is my friend Renee Colatolainis. He's the writer of one of the books I illustrated, and we became friends, and he told me about a yearly book festival that they have in Huntington Beach, California, where I live, and they choose certain authors to come and to a variety of schools and do a presentation, and you sign up and they paid and everything. So I did that. And so I got my feet wet doing that. And then once I got in there, I became a regular. So every year I did that presentation. And then I happen to have a friend, Diane Greenside, who was a school librarian at John Muir, a school in Santa Monica. And she's like, come and have, you know, come and do your presentation. And that was really nice. So that was a school gig that I got because I knew somebody. And do you want me to keep, there's like several other, like I'll just keep, the other one was a while back, they stopped being an organization, but there was an organization called California Readers. And they ran an after-school program that included authors doing school visits after school hours to various schools all over Los Angeles. And all over Los Angeles, there happened to be a lot of schools. It was a lot of Latino population, big Latino population. And my books are bilingual, all of them right now. And so, you know, they're happy to have, I signed up. You just sign up. You just apply and sign up. And so I got on that list. And I was called to do that. I started doing that like regularly, like very often, every few times a month or something. And then another, and so that's that. So you sign up for an organization or a festival or through a friend or your daughter's school. And then came once a principal, like let's say I did a presentation at one school. Well, that principal, if they like my presentation, would that recommend me to other principals in the same school district? So I got a few gigs that way. Return like people recommending me. And that was always nice because you thought like, oh, they really liked my presentation and they referred me or recommended me. And there's just a couple more. And one of them is sometimes people, a lot of schools will just contact me out of the blue. Like I'll just suddenly get this thing in my email, like, would you like to come and do a school visit at our school? And what they did was like, they did a search for local authors. So they just wanted like, you know, because they're not going to have the money to fly somebody in from somewhere else, but they just want like a local author. And sometimes those are private schools, sometimes they were public schools. So, and sometimes they were looking for Latinx authors, because like I said, California and Los Angeles, they have a big population of Latino students. Sometimes they would do that, especially for like a festival like Dia de los Niños or a special day, a yearly event, which I could talk about that later, or Latino Heritage Month. And then a couple more things. During the pandemic, I started getting calls for virtual visits from different states like Texas and different states across the country. I didn't do like a ton of them, but I did. The ones I did in Texas, I mentioned because that was a situation where the principals told each other and then I was recommended. So then I did multiple. In fact, I have one coming up like in a couple months, another one. And I don't want to fly out there, and they're not going to pay for that. So virtual is kind of nice, but I prefer in person for sure because you have that connection. Finally, there's two more. My publisher of one of my books is very good about sending you out. So this person sent me to a Texas book fair from Pinata Books. The publisher is called Arte Publico. And they sent me to Texas for a school visit. And when you go there, you do several different schools and a library visit for like over 2 or 3 days. It's pretty exhausting, but it's really fun and you get caught up in it. And you see, you're with other authors and illustrators. So it's like a real fun camaraderie and all that. The final thing I'll mention is that sometimes at conferences, you meet teachers or principals or librarians from schools, and they'll ask you to do a school visit. Like they'll come to your booth or whatever it is, wherever your presence is, they'll listen to your reading. And then they'll give you their card and they'll say, call me, I want to get you to come to a school visit. So those are some variety of ways. Now that's for the schools. And if you want me to mention the libraries, first I'll breathe and let you talk, but that's the schools.
Oh my goodness, that is fantastic. I mean, it just amazes me the kind of word of mouth and also some of the connections you've made through organizations. You can reach more of your young readers and also the teachers and librarians who are fans of your beautiful books. I mean, I don't know. It sounds so, it's exciting because that's who, you know, you do those books for yourself, but also because that interaction that you get from somebody enjoying the book, I feel like that is gold.
Yeah. Like, one little example is, when I was in Texas and I did the book festival at one of the presentations, and it was Dahlia's Wondrous Hair, the girl whose hair grows straight up to the sky. And she's like, oh, she loves her hair. But it was like, oh, no, it's so gross. What are you going to do? And she creates something beautiful from her strange hair. This girl afterwards, this little girl, she bounces back. She had like a ponytail or something. She's bouncing back. She looks, she walks by me. She goes,
I love your book. I love my hair and I love life.
And then she walked by and I was just like, oh my God. To me, that was so moving. She was just really inspired. She just like was accepting herself and everything about herself through having that example, you know, in the book. So I was like, things like that is very gratifying, you know.
I mean, also I saw on your Instagram, like one of the places, they turned it into a mural. I said, oh my goodness, Laura, that is like such a big honor. I was like, and I hate your illustration on this. And this wall, like, you must have been like, oh, this is like, oh.
Yeah, that was so nice. And they've done that at several schools, some of them where they do just on a big paper, and they'll put it up. And it's not just me. Like, they do that for author visits. They try to really, get the kids ready for your visit. They have them do art projects. They have things that are going to tie into your books. They do a big mural illustration. That's something that really kind of welcome the author. I mean, these schools are so, the staff and the students are so appreciative of the authors being there that you just feel like, oh, you know, it's pretty nice feeling. So sometimes they'll do that. And of course they'll have the librarian will read the books to the kids ahead of time, usually, so that they're familiar, you know, and kids love to have the books read and know them and be familiar with them. And then all of a sudden, here's the author that wrote the book. Oh, I get to hear this now from the author that wrote it, you know, and stuff like that. So it's a good all-around feeling.
Wonderful. And so do you have any tips from author illustrators who are interested in doing school visits, like how to keep that organized? Because that is a, you know, undertaking, and you want to make sure you're on point doing what, you know, is best for the audience and for your school visits.
Yeah. First, I just want to say that I thought at the beginning, like, oh, maybe I have to go and sell myself and try to get my, you know, like send postcards to schools all over the county to see if I can get hired. I'll tell you, I don't think I've never once reached out to a school. Because they find out, like, especially if you have a new book that came out, they find out, oh, who's a local new author? And they love to invite people. So I didn't prepare for a visit by trying to get a visit. So, but once I got booked, then I start planning my presentation early. That's one thing that was for me. I do get nervous. I mean, everybody does in front of an audience. And I'm more and more comfortable as time goes on, but especially at the beginning. But even so, even though I'm a very spontaneous person, I like to really plan my presentation to the word before I go. What I do is, first of all, after I've spoken to the there's always a contact person, usually either the principal, the librarian of the school. And then the first thing I do is I ask them because I have 5 books, so is there a specific book they want to focus on? And usually I veer them towards Thalia's Wondrous Hair, because that's my favorite one. And that's the one I wrote and illustrated. The others I either wrote or illustrated. And then I ask how long the presentation, and then because some schools, like, they know the kids' attention span is short, so they'll say it has to be 30 minutes in and out, or they'll say, oh, 45 minutes, that's good. Usually I like to do 45 minutes if I can, because I do a drawing demo as well, and it takes up some time. But for the little kids, sometimes you adjust. And that's the other thing. How many presentations do you want? Now, if you do a library visit, you're going to do one presentation, pretty much. If you do a school visit, you're like there for the whole day sometimes. You even have lunch there. They provide lunch. And sometimes you'll do 3 or 4 presentations. Like, my limit would be 3 to 4, you know. And I don't think they ever ask for more than 4. And sometimes they divide the lower grades and the upper grades. So, like, for example, pre-K through 2nd will be 1 assembly. And then like 3 through 5 or 6, depending on the school, will be the 2nd assembly. And so sometimes they'll say, do 30 minutes for the younger kids and 45 minutes for the older group. And what I do in that case, because I do my presentation, I do a PowerPoint presentation, and I'll talk a little bit more about that. But also I'll do 2 separate presentations, and I'll bring both of them on a flash drive. So I'll do my short presentation for the younger and the longer for the other. Or sometimes I'm a little bit more like, yeah, just wing it. I'll just do shorter this and longer this for the groups. But I'm pretty good at staying on time. Like, I don't have to, like, have them go, hurry up. You know? I'm usually kind of like, because I practice. Oh, yeah. And you want to know, let's see, what grades? So the other thing is, I was going to say is, you know, you're in contact with the contact person in the school. They tell you what they want. Like months ahead sometimes, like 2-3 months ahead. And so as the time approaches, I start to practice and coming up with my presentation. I usually do a PowerPoint with slides, which includes things like a little bit about my background. You know, like for me, it's like the Cuban American thing and my background. And I have old photos there of my mom when she was singing opera in Cuba. And I have like things that are of interest. And then how I became an author or author illustrator, and, you know, like my evolution, how I started with art, and I show some of my older paintings and then how it evolved. So I show kind of like a little story with my PowerPoint. And then I usually have, if I'm going to read Dahlia's, I pick one book, right? Or they pick one. So if I'm going to read Dahlia's Wondrous Hair, I drew the pictures. So I have the slides. I put all the slides on that PowerPoint of the book without the words, because since they're my pictures, they don't have the words yet. So they're just the words, the wordless pictures. And then when I get to the end of the presentation, after I said my background and all that, then I said, now we're going to read the book. So then I literally pass each slide so they could see it as I read the words. And I memorize my book, so I'm not reading really. I'm just saying now, blah, 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 reading, telling the whole book, whatever, word for word usually. And then at the end, I like to end with a picture of my dog, because I'm like, oh, my biggest fan. He likes to, he doesn't read my books, but sometimes he likes to eat them. And then I show a picture of my cute little dog, and I'm just like, ah. So that's like a picture of my photo, my PowerPoint. It sounds really long. It's literally like 15 minutes at the most. It's not that long. It's short. Sometimes even less, depending on if it's a younger group. But you could do a lot with slides. I like to show a lot of visual slides because I'm a visual person. I'm not the kind of person to have a PowerPoint of like words, graphs, you know, or anything like that. It's all like pictures and photographs. And like sometimes I'll photograph my art department, or I mean where I did my art, my little table and like whatever. And once I do that, I also come up with a drawing demonstration, and I have one that's connected to Dahlia, and it's participatory, so I write little names on actually bookmarks. I write like the names of animals in the bookmarks, and I walk around to the students. This is the lights are on now. The slideshow is over, and they pick a card. They're so excited to be picked to pick a card, and then whatever they pick, I draw. So then I draw, but that tells a story too, like, Dahlia's wonders hair. She puts things in her hair in the book, and then beautiful things happen. But what if Dahlia, let's take it a step further. What if Dahlia puts other animals in her hair? And so, like, they pick the animal, and I have it going in out of the hair. And on the other side comes whatever. Like, if it's a chicken comes into her hair, then maybe on the other side, a little chick hatching from an egg. Or, you know, in other words, I come up with a fun drawing demo that they participate in. And then after we do that, there's a little time for question and answer. Sometimes with the younger kids, I just cut off the question and answer, and that's enough to have like the same exact presentation. Because little kids don't always ask the best questions. They're more like, my favorite color is pink. And I'm okay. Whereas the older kids are like, how did you get started doing, you know, who inspired you to, you know, be so accomplished? No, I'm just kidding. So then we just end the presentation there. And like I said, but to get to that point when I'm at home, I sound so, you know, totally spontaneous. I literally print out my slides, and I literally write a script for every word that I'm going to say as the slides go by. I write a whole script. And for each slide, it's got the picture and the script, a printout, physical printout for me to. But then I memorize it, and then I kind of go off script, and I'm more spontaneous. But I have to have that base to which to go off of. And then that way I can be spontaneous. Otherwise, I'm afraid I'll go off time. I'll go on a tangent, talk too much about one thing. And then I won't be able to get everything in that I need to get in. And, you know, then there's buying books, but I'll breathe again and let you talk.
Oh, no, it's okay. That's fascinating. You're just so organized. And I think that, you know, when you are on point, when you're doing a presentation, you're making sure that those students get as much as they can during that short period of time. That's fantastic.
Yeah. And the thing, and part of it is totally that. And another part is just sort of selfish or like self-serving. I just don't want to look like a fool up there. I don't want to look or be unprepared, like maybe panic up there. I don't want to like lose my place. I don't want to like think I have it together and then actually like screw up. And that kind of happened one time when I was doing one of these after school visits. I was like, oh, so exhausted. I didn't have time. I just said, I've done this a million times. I'll go out there and do. And somehow or another, I got off on some tangent. It just, I couldn't reel it in. It felt sloppy. It was all over the place. And I didn't get to everything I wanted to get to. So from then on, I kind of really learned, you know, come up with a very concise presentation, time it, the whole thing, write it all down, do it, plan it really well, and practice it a lot. And then you can totally just go up there and you don't have to look and read anything. You know it by heart. That's my big thing. It's just so I won't like be like too afraid or nervous.
Understandable. Well, I was wondering, because you're using technology and, you know, as a teacher, I know how technology is wonderful, but like, especially when you are not somebody who works at that school or that library, how do you prepare so that you know that your PowerPoint or the things that you're doing, or if they're having you nowadays, these schools are so fancy. They've got the interactive boards you can draw and it's so cool. Like, how do you prepare? Because every situation's a little different.
Yeah. That could be very nerve-wracking, and I am not a technical person. Some people bring their own equipment, like their laptop and even like a projector, whatever. And I was like told, just bring your, if you don't want to deal with all that and you're not technical, just bring your flash drive. So I have all my PowerPoint presentation on the flash drive. The drawing demo I do without slides, of course, but the PowerPoint on the flash drive. But you weren't taking the chance, because I've had like so many instances. I try to get there. Oh, that's another thing. Get there at least half an hour early to whatever your school visit time is. If it's 12, get there at 11:30. You know, you want to, because they have to test. And then you also ask for a technical person to be available to help, because I'm not a technical person. And you don't know how many times, like, I would say probably 75% of the time there's a problem. You get there, you go, oh, you know, I can't connect, this is not opening, then call so-and-so, and they're like calling the tech person and they're not available, and I'm just saying, everyone, hope this works, what can I do, you know? But the thing is, there's a weird thing that takes over in me, and I'm just like, ooh, adventure. Like, if they totally break down and they can't give me the PowerPoint and they don't know what to do, then I'm going to be like, I'm holding up a book, I'm reading it, I'm winging it. And I'm even though I plan so much, the funny part is I'm super good at just winging it and being spontaneous. So I don't mind. And there hasn't been a situation where I've completely not been able to show the slides. I think there's been a situation where it's been greatly delayed. And then I've done something else to kind of like, you know, how a comedian will come out because the show is delayed or the person didn't show up yet. And I don't know what that's called. I forgot. But so I've had to do that. Now, usually they end up getting together at the last hour, at the last minute. Like, oh, the kids are lining up, they're coming through the door, and they're like, okay, I think it's working now. I'm like, okay. And sometimes it's so, like, the quality looks so bad. You're like, turn down the lights, and they turn down the lights, and it still looks really fuzzy, and you're like, oh, my art is so much better than this. But then it's like, so what? You know, and then you kind of just go like, whatever. And then you see the kids, and you connect with them. Like, I try to riff with them and talk with them, and they're so nice, and they're so open, and so you just have fun. I just have fun with it now. But you're right. Now, a lot of schools have these smart boards, and they'll be like, this is our smart board. They're so excited. And at first, I was like, oh, no, this is going to make it so much worse. And I don't know why I thought that. And then the last couple of schools I've done, it's actually nice. And the quality was actually better than with the overhead projector and the whatever slide screen. And it was It was actually good, but I will not do this on the screen drawing. No, no, no. Once the PowerPoint is over, I put my pad on the table. I have a stand-up pad. I get out my markers, my Sharpie mark, and I do a presentation in real life.
Awesome. I know
this to a drawing presentation in real life. Yeah.
I'm sure the students just really enjoy that. I mean, that is such a cool idea. It really gets them thinking about storytelling and kind of brainstorming, and then you being able to draw it right there. It's probably very much like magic to them.
It is magic to them. And then once again, I'll tell you, it's not really magic. Because I have like 5 cards with 5 different animals that I show them. You have no idea how many times I've practiced each. This is how I draw the lion. This is how I draw the frog. This is how I draw the chicken. And I will like draw it, and I'll do the drawing demo on my own, just on a little piece of paper, practice it. I don't just spontaneously ask them like, draw a dinosaur or draw an elephant. I could. But they won't look as cute because these are ones I've already practiced. They look cute. So they come out different every time, of course. But, you know, but for them, it is magic. Like, oh, look how fast she draws. And like, I look so sure of myself. But then I do tell them, you know, like, I do show them in my slideshow. I show them my super crude sketch. This is one thing I do. I show them the super crude sketch, and then I show them the refined drawing, and then I show them the final color painting. So they see that it doesn't just come out as a beautiful finished artwork. It has to progress. The sketch part is just thinking how it might look. The drawing is refining how you decided it's going to be. And then you add the color and make it a complete illustration. So, you know, they're not thinking like, oh, well, this is so unreachable. I could never do it. I tell them there's a process, trust me.
Awesome. So I was wondering, is there a certain time of the school year that you tend to get heavily requested for visits?
For me, since I do bilingual books in Spanish and English, mostly English, but Spanish too, sometimes in April, Dia de los Niños is a yearly occasion that emphasizes Latino stories and creators. So sometimes like schools will reach out to different authors and illustrators at that time, and so I've gotten calls in April. In fact, the one I have one scheduled right now that's for April, and they didn't specifically say it's for Dia de los Niños, but I think maybe that's why they reached out to me, because you know that my books are bilingual. And then another thing is sometimes September, October for me, because it's Latino Heritage Month. But other times, sometimes just generally, like it seems in December before winter break, sometimes I get called because it's sort of like a little treat to send them off on their 2 or 3 week break. And another thing is May or June, like as school is going to end, sometimes I've gotten more presentations during those times. Yeah.
Interesting. Wow. Well, that is so helpful. All of this amazing information that you're giving us, the listeners, about the school visits that you've done. And I don't think we hit on this one because we kind of talked about it before we started the interview. I saw on your Instagram, you went to El Salvador for a visit.
Yes, I went to El Salvador. I'm trying to remember what it was. It was part of the sort of like the speakers program for the embassy, something. It was super like prestigious sounding. And I was like, what the heck? I wasn't their first choice. A friend of mine, Monica Brown, who's an author of many books, and she's Peruvian and Colombian or something, but mostly Peruvian. She's an amazing author. And I guess they asked her and she wasn't available. And she was nice enough to recommend me. We were in a critique group at the time. And so she recommended me. And I was like, oh my God, what an honor. It was very nerve-wracking and scary for me because, you know, I was going to be gone for 5 days. And I had a young child at the time. And, you know, very much connected and attached to me. not a baby, but you know, she was, she didn't want her mommy to leave town. So I was like, why am I, why am I doing this? But it was such a beautiful program. They wanted an author illustrator to go out there and really inspire what they had. They had this like citywide or statewide, countrywide, whatever, writing program to really inspire kids from different parts of El Salvador who were experiencing maybe poverty or even like some domestic abuse potentially, or just like coming from different walks of life together. They want to inspire them to not just write, but to write about their lives and to have a voice. They were really trying to give them a voice out into the world. And so they saw like a author illustrator from the United States who was Latino as someone who could come and inspire them to aspire to get out of their situation and expand their young minds. I mean, they were elementary school. There was one that was like, I think middle school or high school that I also did. But they wanted to really get them to think of an art form that they could use to express themselves and to tell their own stories. I mean, it was all about like really delving deep and being open and telling their stories. And so, I mean, I was just so honored. And, you know, it was a really wonderful experience. And it was, again, they were just so grateful to have me there. And I was just so like honored. It was beautiful and really artistic. Like their thinking, it was very progressive in wanting this kind of artistic expression, really, of the writing, mostly writing, but also illustrating. But it was too. So it was a wonderful thing. And I was gone for 5 days, and I survived. My family survived, and it was like a wonderful experience in my life. Yeah.
Thank you for sharing that with us. It was just like floored. I was just going through your Instagram, and those people who are listening, you should definitely check out Laura's Instagram. She just has these moments of her career that I was like, wow, she did this. She did this. It was just so cool. I was like, because you're very outgoing, as I could tell from our first interview meeting, but you're very humble too, Laura. And I was like, yeah, she's been on a few school visits, just a few. And I was like, yeah. So, but besides the school visits, I meant to bring this up earlier before we started chatting. Congratulations on your new agent.
Oh, thank you. I'm really excited to get signed with Michelle Jackson of LCS. She's such a really genuine, warm, passionate person, and she just loves being an agent. And she's pretty new at, you know, representing picture book authors, but she's like so gung-ho about it. And I guess in her previous position, she oversaw a lot of picture books, so she has the experience, but not like officially or something. So I was just like really happy. And one of my former agency mates has her also as an agent now. And, you know, it was a good process. And actually, she starred liked one of my posts, the Latin on the pitch for Latinx pitch, on Twitter, on X Twitter. And, you know, there was a few people that did that. And this one, it turned out, was the best choice for me. So I was really excited and I still am. So
it's going to be great. I mean, hey, she has good taste. I agree with the people she signed. I was like, oh, they're wonderful. And then it's so creative. And Laura, I forgot to ask you a question. How about library visits? Because those might be a little bit different.
Yes. The thing that's different about library visits is that there's a different process. There is a process that you have to proactively take, a step you have to proactively take in order to do library visits. You don't just randomly go and say, hey, can I do a visit? At least in California. So the process is you fill out an application. You just go and ask for an application. Anybody could get one for each library system. In my area, there's LAPL, Los Angeles Public Library System, and SNPL, Santa Monica Public Library System. So you ask for the application, you fill it out, say you're author illustrator. It's kind of, you know, a comprehensive application. It's something that you need to go through. And then what happens is they'll contact you to do an audition for, you know, each library system, just like one library for the LA library, one library for Santa Monica library. And they'll choose like which library, you know, which branch, right? And they'll have it, and they'll like coordinate with you what's a good date. And then you'll set up a time. You'll come in, you'll do your present, you'll practice your presentation, create it, the whole thing. And then you'll come in and you'll do presentation for a kind of a relatively small audience of kids that they kind of, you know, corral in to sit there in your presentation. And then the main librarian and the kids librarian will be watching. So it's a little nerve-wracking. You're like an audition, you know. But I just did my best, you know, and the kids, I interacted with the kids and all of that. Oh, and at a library, often you don't do a PowerPoint or short slides or do that. It's more, it's non-technical. So at the library, the kids are sitting in front of you on the floor. It's not a huge group. And so I just brought my books and I read them, or I went through some of the books and talked about what they were about. And then sometimes I also have pictures, like let's say if I want to talk about how I came up with the idea for Floating a Mama Song. Well, like I might have mentioned earlier, my mom used to be an opera singer in Cuba. And part of my slideshow, I have a black and white picture of her with her troupe in the opera. So I have that photo for the in-person library visit. I have that photo mounted on foam core and several other photos too that are also seen in my slideshow that talk about my background. And so I'll just hold up the photo. It's big enough for them to see. Oh, this is my mom. She's an opera singer in Cuba, you know, blah, blah, blah. And then it leads to, and this is the book. And then I start reading the book. So I don't just, like, it's not just story time at the library. You got to give them, for me, I got to give them more. So I give them everything I can from my slideshow that I think is important in another physical form that I can hold up. And then I read one or two books, usually just one book, but then I show the others. And then I do the drawing demonstration, same thing as the other, as the school library visits, or the school visits. So the library visits, non-technical. And but there are some visits where I have shown slides, but the majority of libraries, you're doing more like a small reading. So once you audition, if you get accepted, and hopefully if everything goes well, you will. I did. I got accepted. And then you go on a master authors list that the central librarian, like in Los Angeles, there's a central library and there's a person that handles the authors list. It's like this great thing. I'm on the authors list. But it's because you took these steps, you know. And so I got on the authors list. And once you're on the authors list, libraries start calling you out of the blue. Hey, I see you're doing presentations and blah, blah, blah. Can you do a presentation? And then, you know, I set up lots of dates for those things. And then you're just coordinating with the individual branch librarian after that point. But it's really nice. I mean, unfortunately, that slowed down since the pandemic. And I don't think I've been on any library visits. Where for a while I was doing quite a few. And also, I was going to say, with the library visits, the branch librarians talk to each other. So if they liked your presentation, they'll tell the other librarian, hey, she's really good. You should have her at your library. So it's kind of a nice system that once you get in it, you're on a roll, and then you get a lot of gigs if you're lucky. And they pay pretty well, you know. And you usually just do one presentation, not like at a school, you might do several, but a library just one. Is that library visits are different than school visits because they're a mixed group of ages. So you'll have parents there. So it's a little different feeling. You'll have a mom with like a 5-year-old and a crying baby in her lap. You know, you'll have toddlers. You'll have like fifth graders. You'll have all ages and their parents, usually one parent. And so, but it's kind of, and they're usually just, again, really appreciative and sitting there and very into presentation. And it doesn't make it that intimidating because the parents are there. They kind of like, they're like rooting for you. So it's really fun, but it's really different. And there are times when like hardly anybody shows up and you're doing it for like three people, but you're like, okay. Whereas when you go to a school, most often there are literally assemblies where you have a microphone and you're speaking to like 100 to 200 people. So it's a quite a different feeling. But I like both. I like both audiences. I like a tiny audience and I like a huge audience and anything in between.
Thank you so much for sharing that about your library visits as well, Laura. You are such a gifted storyteller that you're able to delight children of all ages. I mean, it's a really good story and beautiful illustrations that really capture the kids. And it's something that just, yeah, it always amazes me whenever I read a really good, well-written children's book to my students. It really is like I waved a wand over that I am this power. I read this book, but yeah. I know it's all of the work that, authors, the illustrators like yourself have put into it to make it that magical experience. So thank you.
Oh, well, you're very welcome and you're very kind.
Where can people go find your books and more about you since this is a podcast and they can't see them?
Well, actually on my website, I have all these, and I know you've been saying about Instagram, I have all the information about my school visits and all that is actually on my website. Instagram, I'm not as good at posting as I should be. Everybody's, a lot of people feel that way, I guess. But I don't have all that information on my Instagram. I have it on my website. And I have to admit that probably for a lot of people this happened too, but the pandemic kind of like made me come to a screeching halt in terms of updating my website. So I'm sorry to say that none of my new work that I'm working on is on there, but all the books that I've done. And then there's like that long list of school visits, I decided it was good to list them all, from back when I started or whatever. And they're not exactly updated. I've done more since. But of course, since the pandemic, most schools were not doing school visits. So, there's not that many extras. But yeah, there's definitely on lauralacamara.com. Check it out. And there's pictures of me doing the presentations. And there's a photo of me in El Salvador with some students. And yeah, it's nice. I'm really intimidated by doing websites or the technology part of it. So I'm probably going to be one of those people that even though everybody says it's so easy to do a website, I'm probably going to try to hire somebody to do it for me or to help me do it, I guess. But meanwhile, it does have, it's very comprehensive. So check it out. LauraLacamara.com.